I love being part of AmeriCue Credit Union, where I share my dreams, my goals, and my challenges with those who know me best, where I stay connected no matter where my life takes me. And financial solutions are designed with my best interest in mind. Create a meaningful connection. Visit AmeriCue.org to learn more and open an account today. AmeriCue and you. Let's connect. Membership eligibility required. Insured by NCUA.
Yep. This is Smarter Collaboration, the podcast series that shows you how intentional collaboration creates breakthrough outcomes. Today's show leaps into Cisco. Yes, they generate $59 billion in annual recurring revenue, but listen to the soul of Cisco. It's all about the power of connectivity. They truly are the bridge to possible. Now let's join our host, Ivan Matviak, co-author of the best-selling book, Smarter Collaboration, and co-founder of Gardner and Collaborators. Enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome. I'm Ivan Matviak, the co-author of the book Smarter Collaboration and the co-founder of Gardner and Collaborators. If I asked you to paint a picture of people collaborating together, they'd probably paint people huddled in a room together, actively engaging in debating ideas together. But that reality has changed dramatically over the last few years as remote and hybrid work has become commonplace. I've certainly felt the impact of how a physical space that I'm working in and the technology that I'm using can either aid or be a barrier to effective collaboration. So today, we're going to talk to two executives from Cisco about how the design and the use of physical space and technology can help improve workplace collaboration. Janet Monk is the Senior Advisor, Future of Work, Smart and Sustainable Environments. In her work as a hybrid work solution advisor, Janet shares new and transformational approaches to work that empower customers to address their most pressing challenges. With over 30 years in technology and business, she leverages a wide range of skills from IT, finance, sales, and engineering that help her understand not only targeted outcomes, but how to achieve them. Ray Malora is leading Cisco's effort to redefine the purpose, use, and experience of the workplace by engaging leaders throughout the company and employees wherever they are. Cisco's looking beyond design and focusing on needs and uncovering how space can be a tool for achieving business and team and individual goals underpinned by the breadth of Cisco's technology and services. And Ray's skills are unique, but very complementary to Janet's. Ray has 30 years of focused and passionate experience in applying the principles of user-centered design and the creation of software and services and workplace experiences. And his experience also as a professional guitarist, maybe we'll touch on that a little bit today, adds a different audio dimension as he collaborates on 2 million square feet of office space owned by Cisco. So Janet, Ray, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you. I would not call myself a professional guitar player, but that's fine.
That's okay. We'll have a little interview at some point.
Massive hobbyist.
Yeah. There you go.
So thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, no, thank you for being here, Janet. The big question that I'd like to explore today is how does space and technology play a relevant role in helping teams to collaborate more effectively? So maybe, Janet, we can start with you. There's lots of hybrid work happening today. Why is a hybrid work environment harder on a collaboration process?
Well, I think we've all learned over the past few years that doing concentration work at home is easy and in many cases more effective than working in an office place. And we all learned to collaborate remotely because everybody was remote. Nobody was in a physical space together or very rarely were they in a physical space together. But now that things have progressed, we've got some people going back to offices. We've got some companies mandating people go back to offices certain numbers of days a week. And we have other people that are remote And we know that about 95% of meetings in the future are going to have remote participants. So when you've got a few people on site, you have the advantage of body language. You have the advantage of seeing eye gestures from one person to the next. You have the advantage of hearing the side conversations a little bit that go on. And when you're remote, you may not be able to experience those things unless you have the right technology and the right environment to be able to facilitate your ability to do that.
Absolutely. That distinction between the fully in-office environment, the hybrid environment, and the remote environment, I think are really interesting, right? In that, at least from our research, in that fully remote environment, it can be hard to develop trust, right? Mm. That's so important for effective collaboration. It's hard to know where the knowledge and the talent in the organization exists. And in several of the companies that I've worked with that are fully remote, the attrition rates are actually materially higher than in the organizations where people are either hybrid or fully on site. I think it's interesting to think about some of the different approaches that you need in a fully on site, fully remote or hybrid environment.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the thing to remember is that when you're in a hybrid environment, the experience needs to be good both for the people that are physically present in an office that are physically together, and it needs to be good for all the participants who are remote. So you may have multiple remote participants in addition to those that are in the office, creating an equitable experience that allows them all to collaborate on an equal playing field is challenging.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, Ray, were you going to say something?
No, I'm just going to add in, you know, that if you think about the very basics of collaborating and so on, it's around engagement and connection, right? So if you feel engaged in a conversation or connected to the person you're, you know, collaborating or interacting with, the value of that moment, that meeting, that whatever it is going to rise. And just because we have video doesn't mean we're necessarily connected at that level. Yes, I can see you all. We can do that, right? So, and Janet touched on some of it, but I think this is where things that we don't talk about a lot, you know, and all this, you know, return to office and hybrid and all these kind of things are foundational elements to still ensuring that those connections happen. So, you know, EQ and, you know, how do you lead? And, you know, leadership today is different than it was. And there's some really big, I think, meaty topics that get lost in the shuffle of, you know, sort of the headlines that we see. Well, people are being forced to return. Oh, we're going to be all remote. You know, we sort of center in on these things, but we don't really get to the basis of, are we engaged in what's trying to happen? And are we actually still really connected? And when we were together, it's a little bit easier because at least we're together. At least we're face to face, you know, we're in the same room. But even then, I think we could all think of a meeting or an event we were at that either, I don't know, the person leading it wasn't very good at doing that or whatever it might be. And we were disengaged in that moment too. So those are some of the things that we really think about when we're designing space. And it may seem counter to that because you think, well, what does that have to do with designing space? But for me, it's those underlying foundational elements. If I can't get those right, it doesn't matter how great the space is. It doesn't matter how good the technology is. It doesn't matter how much money I have to create something. It still isn't going to work, you know. So,
yeah. So let's go there for a second, Ray. Let's talk about the design of that physical space. Can you talk about how do you think about designing a space that really helps contribute to effective collaboration?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, prior to COVID and so on, you know, the years prior to that, really the 10 or 15 years prior to that, there was a big shift in workplace. And I think we all were witness to it. We're all the right age to have witnessed it, right? That we moved away from offices and cubes and we moved to open plan or activity-based working or whatever the heck the buzzword of the day was, right? And all that really was a realization that, you know, we built a space and jammed a bunch of people into it and we created all these walls around them. And then we wondered why they didn't engage with each other or interact with each other. So we started taking down walls and we started creating more of an opportunity to do that. Now, we as workplace designers and architects and interior design, we also brought back into that, those spaces, the elements that just attract someone to space, right? So sight lines, being able to see daylight, you know, those kind of things, right? that's great. COVID arrives, right? And coming out of COVID, it's not as simple as just saying, well, let's go back to that, because the ratios is what I feel are what has changed. So prior, we may have had an area for set aside for a team, and there was shared but individual seating, and maybe it was on a 50-50 basis, right? There was 50% of the space was individual space, and 50% was, you know, conference rooms and collab space and so on. In some cases, it was even 70-30, where you had a heck of a lot of individual space and so on. If you just viewed it from the lens of interior design, you know, looking down on it, the big shift has been that. So it's been a massive reduction in individual space with a massive uptick in shared spaces. And not, you know, it's not just we didn't just flip it, but it's also the way we've created those shared spaces, the intention behind those, how we've incorporated our technology into it and so on. That's been the big shift, at least at Cisco. And what we're finding is that, yes, we still need at times to have heads down work occur in an office environment or whatever it might be, or, you know, an individual, their home setup isn't conducive enough for them to be heads down. So we still supply those types of spaces, but the vast majority of use, at least that we've seen post COVID, is in events, activities, you know, those kind of things that require different types of collaborative spaces, whether it's traditional conference rooms or large meeting rooms, or, you know, we have a thing we call the Grand Community Lounge, which is essentially a series of tables and so on set up around a catering endpoint, you know, where there's coffee, tea, and that, so you can have a meal and share and those kind of things. We see an incredible increase in those use of those spaces.
I was going to ask you, do you see people gravitating toward one of those types of spaces more than the other?
Yeah, it's much more it's kind of the seen and be seen thing, you know? So being out in the open, when you have this flow of, example, I was in our Atlanta office, our new Atlanta space a few weeks ago, and there was multiple events, there were customer briefings, there was a lot of stuff going on, there was a lot of movement. And you generally find people that were there, even for individual work, they were hovering around where all that movement was, because they wanted to see the activity, wanted to feel the buzz. They didn't want to be, you know, sort of off in a corner somewhere. Now, if they needed to make a call or do something like we're doing and needed, you know, more privacy or quiet or whatever, those spaces are nearby for them to do so. But people had this tendency to gravitate to where other people are, because that's kind of why you get together, right? If you wanted to sit alone, you would have just stayed home, right? So this idea that you are home alone, get in the car or whatever, you know, commute to a space and then go find the furthest point away from people. Why did I do that? Why would it just stay at home? Right. So it's much more about being connected and being together, I think. And we see that day in and day out in the spaces that we're reopening, reimagining, recreating. So
maybe one other question before we move on from the physical space. Right. So in our research, we talk about in our book, Smarter Collaboration, we talk about the fact that collaboration isn't the right answer all the time. Sometimes it's good just to put your head down and do your own work. So how do you think about collaboration space versus private space as well?
Yeah. So what we try not to do is make that decision for you as the end user, right? We try to educate and provide the space, a multitude of spaces, so you can choose the correct space or the appropriate space for what the task is you're trying to do. And that's that basis of intention-based design, right? If we understand the breadth of reasons you may need to use space and provide all those to you, you can choose that instead of me saying to you, you need to go into a four-person conference room to collaborate, because you may not do that. You may say, no, actually, we want to be over in the lounge area in the soft seating and have a whiteboard on wheels we can move around. Or you may be a much more structured group of, no, yeah, you're right, we want to close the door and have, you know, seating across from each other, you know. So we try to create as many environments as we can and choice in that environment, so you can decide how you collaborate, not me decide. And I think that's where we see a lot of, and you probably have as well, where we see a lot of where it goes wrong, where there's this highly structured collaboration means X, Y, and Z, and it can only happen in places 1, 2, and 3. And that's where it gets, for me, it gets a little weird.
Collaboration space.
No. You're collaborating in the non-collaboration space. You know, like, why would we do that, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think the other thing to remember is that it feels like I don't have the objective evidence to prove it. But what I would say it feels like after the last few years is that we really look at how are we achieving the business objectives versus as much of prior to everyone being sent home during COVID. It was more about FaceTime. It was more about proximity. It was more about who your cube was next to or your office was next to or what have you. Once everybody was home, it became more about achieving business objectives and how we go about doing that. And I'm not sure that we're ever going to fully go back to the other direction. I think it's going to continue to be how to achieve the business objectives and the different things and activities you have to do that. So there's decision-making, there's brainstorming, there's learning, having learning opportunities, there's socializing. And all of those things, Ray's got to provide spaces for people to be able to achieve. Depending on who the occupants of that space are, they may need more or less of different types of that space, but all that has to be taken into account. So again, we just stay focused on achieving the business objectives.
Yeah,
and that makes sense, right? Start with almost the end in mind as you're thinking about the design of the space. Yeah. So we've been, I'm sorry, Ray, did you want to end?
No, please continue.
So we talked a little bit about the physical space there, and we'll come back to that a bit more, but I want to pivot, if we can, to the technology side of things. Obviously, I mean, we've been using technology in the office space for a long time, but there was a massive transformation post-COVID, as you alluded to, Ray, around the role of technology and collaboration. So maybe, Janet, can you talk a little bit about how the role of technology has evolved?
Yeah, most people, I think, learned that their technology at home in many cases is better than the technology they had in the office. If you think about prior to COVID, people may be walking around an office with their laptop or their cell phone, and they're trying to maintain a connection or moving from space to space over the course of their day, depending on the different tasks they had to do. And it was quite often that you might lose your internet connection through your wireless, or you might have to re-authenticate, or even worse, you might walk into a conference room that you have a very important call with a customer or a partner or maybe your teammates in another city, and you almost had to arrive half an hour early to figure out how to make it work, because every single room worked differently. It was a hodgepodge of technology. It wasn't always just a simple room that actually worked. You knew how to work it. So you had to kind of come in and play with it to make sure that by the time that call happened, you'd be prepared and you'd be connected to the internet and you didn't have any challenges. So people really learned that companies in general have underinvested in the technology they need to be effective in their jobs.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with that statement more. It's inoperable technology or inconsistent technology is the single greatest boat anchor, I think, to failure of workspace. We've all suffered it. All of us. We've all gone in a room and been like, where's the wire? I don't know. Why isn't that reading? You know, and you start, we're 10 minutes late. You know, you instantly today you'd have that. Why did I bother? Why am I here? You know, it works at home. And, you know, if the single purpose you're going in is to connect and you can't connect, how many times are you going to do that before you never go back in? You know, and I think it also speaks very loudly. Now, look, obviously I'm biased and I have an opinion on, you know, opinion on what direction I think people should go on this. But putting that aside, when you have mixed technology environments in a single location, right? So you have to figure out, is this a this room or a that room or a this technology or that technology? Right. And you don't know which one's which, and everyone changes in different rooms. I mean, come on, you know, it just doesn't work that way anymore. And those decisions were made, you know, at the end of the day, when you're building space, there's all kinds of decisions you have to make around scope, schedule, budget, so on and so forth. And a lot of times they were the right decision because of the budget that was available or the, I don't know, whatever it might be, fine. But that's not making a decision based on the end user need or putting the end user first. Because a lot of times that decision might have been more expensive, you know, to say, hey, look, we're just going to buy one technology for the whole building. That potentially was a more expensive decision to make and didn't seem like the right one at the time. Now it's the only one that really matters. I mean, honestly, right? Those mixed environments, we've all suffered through them.
It's tough. Yeah, you don't know. Like you said, you don't know which technology is operating in which room. You got to plan in advance for it and send out the right links and things. So what do you recommend there? Right? Do you recommend having a single technology for you know, a given office?
Well, again, biased, right? Because of who I work for, right? But obviously, yes, I think you do need. And further to that, when we design space now, when we design a room or an open, whatever, it doesn't matter. We design the space around the needs of the technology, not the other way around. I think pre-COVID, and I think even still today, you know, our friends in architecture, interior design, and so on, you know, we would lay space out, and then we would apply the technology to it. Then we would bring in IT and say, hey, you know, we have 9 8-person conference rooms here. They need screens, you know, whatever, right? And you're not, very rarely are you going to get it right and have guessed the need of the technology beforehand, because you know, there's a camera, you know, you think of like a WebEx board, right? And there's a camera on the bottom. Well, there is an optimum distance for that camera where it just doesn't work that well anymore if you're too far away, right? How close the sidewalls are, where you have glasses compared to not glass, where the speaker placement is. I mean, it's basic audio acoustics, that kind of a thing. And even the lighting, you know, I've seen rooms where the room looks great. It's an amazing room. Then all of a sudden you slap technology on it and there's shadowing and there's all this other kind of stuff. So, and honestly, I would do this even if I didn't work for Cisco, is that I would say, what's the technology that we've landed on? Great. What does the room need to do to enable the best out of that kit? And I would design against that. If that means a couple feet longer this way, you know, I don't know, whatever it might be. We are doing that nonstop now. So not only do we have a single platform, obviously, because we're Cisco and we provide that, right? But when you go into our spaces are designed for the kit. So you get a very seamless interaction as an end user. You know, Ivan, if you walked in, you'd be like, oh, okay. It wouldn't be that barrier. Now the barrier is where it should be. It's on you. Can you lead the meeting or not? You know, and that's a whole different discussion, right? But you can't blame the room. You can't blame the kit. You can't blame any of it. Now it's up to the individuals to figure out the way to connect.
I was reading about what looked like a really interesting technology to me. I think it was called Campfire.
Yeah.
That looked to me like an interesting integration of the physical space and the technology and how those two blend together.
It's exactly what it is. That's funny you should even bring that up. That came from a joint, you know, there was a bunch of us that worked on that together, including our product folks, our IT folks, members of our facility staff. It's also a great example of how the voice of those of us in facilities and workplace design and so on have much more seat at the table now, even on product design, because we're very aware of how people interact with space as architects and interior designers and so on, right? That's our vocation. Well, we're able to now, especially in our company, because I, you know, we have direct connection with these folks, we're able to impart upon them what we've learned the hard way over years of designing space, what does and what doesn't work. And that solution is an early view of what's a different way to interact with technology. Does it always have to be hanging on the wall? Yeah, I mean, think of it as it's what it's called, right? We're sitting around an area, whether it's a square or a circle, whatever it might be, how we design it. And the technology is sort of slightly lower in the center. So you're sort of looking at it like you would a campfire. You're around it like a campfire. So you're getting this sort of 360-degree view. You're seeing the participant on your screen at an angle that's comfortable. You know, it's not necessarily this looking up kind of a thing or down the end of a table. And the intention is to make it a much more comfortable and sort of, you know, unique, smaller feel to the setting instead of that traditional, you know, we've all been in rooms where, and by the way, I think they work really well. You have technology at the end of the table. The table is tapered so everybody has a view. But just that action of sitting at a table and look, that brings a certain quality, I think, to a meeting. There's a formality to that.
Sure.
How do you start to break down that formality yet still have that ability to have all those people connected? Campfire is a direction, an idea, you know, in that direction. I think you're going to see more of that stuff evolve, too. There's a time and a place for formality, right? And there's a time and a place for less formality. So how do we start to incorporate that? And not just fall back to, well, just grab some sofas and chairs and everybody hang out. You know, we're still looking up at a screen, right? So is that the best we can do? Can't we incorporate it better? So,
And think about the kind of tasks that you're trying to accomplish in both of those scenarios, right? So when it's kind of that tapered table with the video at the end, more likely you're trying to make a very big decision or you're being informed that a decision has been made and here's the direction we're going to go. I mean, it's meant to be a very much a leader-centric type of a meeting of some sort, whereas in the campfire situation, you're probably more likely collaborating, bouncing ideas off of each other, trying to do maybe even a business review where you're trying to understand what's going well, what's the challenge. And it's just meant to be much more collaborative and much more intimate and to make people feel comfortable sharing.
Yeah.
I'm curious if you guys, video technology has been around for a while, although its use has exploded. Are you seeing any technologies that are starting to push the boundaries of what we're used to or sort of changing the way that we're collaborating? What's new? Is there anything new on the horizon?
Yeah, I mean, the things that we're starting to see is not just the sense that the video is up, but, you know, you're getting facial recognition and other things, so you know who's coming and going. So that's providing you as the speaker or the presenter with a certain amount of information. I've seen some things where they're actually, you know, especially in the room, we can measure temperature in the room. Is the temperature of the room rising or falling? And you can even start to do that with individuals on the screen. And it's a way to start to measure virtual engagement because they're also tracking eye movement, right?
Right.
So if I'm doing one of these, right, looking around, or if my eyes are kind of wandering, I'm constantly looking down, that if you saw my entire body language, you might pick up on Ray's bored, he's disconnected, but you're only seeing me from, you know, sort of mid-chest up, so you don't get those other cues. My eye movements could give you a sense of that, right? So think of it in the future, you could have almost an engagement meter as the presenter, and you see your engagements dropping, you're like, I'm losing them. You know, because you're getting this sort of feedback.
Or asking to do an email, right?
You got it, right? There's a line there where you don't want to be big brother and everything, but you're trying to, I think it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. You're trying to fill the gap of not being in person where you can use your entire EQ ability to look at body language, movement, all the other things that normally you would pick up on in a space that you're not getting now. So I personally think the movement in that direction of video technology would be incredibly helpful, especially as a presenter or someone, you know, who's, if I have a team meeting, a virtual team meeting, right? I'm missing out on that. I'm missing out on that body language and that feedback. So if I could get even some of that via technology, that would be great. So
that's right.
Yeah. And I think the other piece to that, Ray, is the abilities around closed captioning and being able to do real time closed captioning in multiple languages. So if you looked on where we're at right now, there's a little CC bubble in the lower left-hand corner. And if you clicked on that, you could have closed captioning and you can choose your language. And as technology gets better and better, as AI gets better and better, it will be much more accurate as it does the translation. So when you have, I had a Japanese person working for me who spoke very little English and I don't speak any Japanese. And that was how we did the majority of our communication, was trying to stumble through what we knew and then using the closed captioning.
That's amazing, actually, because Janet, you touched earlier on the challenge of the remote person trying to participate in a conversation when multiple people are in the room together, right? It can be very hard to break into that conversation. But those kind of language barriers, right, are create another hurdle toward that kind of engagement. So that's fascinating.
Yeah. You know, just you made me think of something when you mentioned breaking in. What's, I think, also incredible with all the technological advances we have and all the technology we have, one of the simplest ways that we try to train people on and so on staying engaged on a video screen is still doing the human thing that you would do in person. So, for example, say we were all speaking, Ivan, and you hadn't said anything for a few minutes, right? And I was leading this call. I can pause and say, hey, Ivan, just checking in. No, you haven't had a chance to comment lately. Anything you wanted to add to that? So just that simple act of pausing, referencing you, acknowledging you, giving you an opening, that has nothing to do with technology. Nothing.
But that act
connects you, right?
Totally. I'm glad you raised that, right? It's such an important leadership skill. It's always been important, right? Making sure that people around the room are engaged. If, you know, The basic idea behind smarter collaboration in the book is that you're bringing together the right experts at the right time for a particular conversation. But obviously, if you're not strong at facilitating and making sure that you're actually getting the inputs from those experts, then what's the point of having them all in the room together, right? So that's a really, it's a really important leadership skill in general, and particularly, as you say, when people are remote, right? When it is harder to get engaged in those conversations.
Yeah, I mean, we have these conversations all the time, you know, when we're doing our change management approach on space and so on, to remind people in sessions that, you know, the agenda was created for a reason. An agenda actually matters. It gives people a sense of what's to come in this meeting they're about to attend. It gives you an ability to control the conversation and drive to the outcome. It allows you those moments to pause and connect, right? Again, nothing to do with technology, but still, I think, as important. You know, we can talk about technology all day long. We can't forget about those other things too. So,
absolutely. I love this conversation that we're having on collaboration. But let's take a quick break for a moment. And we've got a message from Cisco that we want to share with everybody. And then we'll come back and continue the conversation.
At Cisco, we see the office as a platform to advance our strategic enterprise goals, including attracting and retaining the best talent and accelerating our net zero journey. Our new Atlanta location is the most recent example of how we are using space to help realize our goals around people and purpose. Technology provides a new opportunity to transform your workplace into places people want to be. Visit cisco.com/go/hybrid workplace.
All right, and we're back. So, Jen and Ray, what specifically do professionals in the workplace need to do differently in the future?
The $3,400 question, or whatever they call it, right? Janet, do you want to go first? You want me to go first?
No, go ahead.
You know, for me, we, and again, you know, I'm going to try not to just use terminology without backing it up, right? So we are very much interested in the intention of space and then designing against an intention or designing against a business need and so on. We often say, you know, Cisco's real estate strategy today has nothing to do with real estate, and it really doesn't. You know, when we make our decisions around, are we keeping or divesting of space? Are we investing in a certain area? Are we moving to a location? So on and so forth. We're doing that based on something more than just the space. You know, we're trying to make it so there's an intention there. There's a rationale there. There's a need there. One, because it allows us then to measure, are we meeting that intention? Are we meeting that need? And so on. A quick example, we recently opened space in Atlanta. And the space we opened is directly adjacent to Georgia Tech, which is one of the universities we've hired students from for years and years and years, way longer than I've even been at Cisco. Yet the closest we ever were to Georgia Tech prior to this was very far, you know, about an hour or so away. Now having that proximity is allowing us not only that connection, but we're already seeing an increase in hirings, engagements, activities, and events directly with the student body. So it's opened up to us a direct pipeline to talent. Now, frankly, we could have picked anywhere in Atlanta to move. We could have picked anywhere to move, right? It's a great time to be looking for real estate. So, but our intention there was to further our connection to Georgia Tech, right? And to also be able to show who we are as a company, what we do with technology and so on. Yes, but that was a very intention-based decision around that. And I think you will see as the months and year goes on now, years go on now, a lot when you see an announcement about how we're developing our space, generally speaking, they're all being based on some intention, whatever that intention may be. And they'll become more clear, you know, as we start to open them up. I think that where people aren't making those decisions or where it's going to catch up to them when they're purely saying, well, no one's coming in, let's get rid of it. Or everybody is in this location, we should go there too. You know, that kind of thing. I think that's going to really start to backfire on decision-making because there's really not a true intention of being there. So,
yeah, and I would add to that that it goes back to the point we were talking about earlier, how it is now a matter of achieving business objectives as opposed to about relationships, proximity, FaceTime, what have you. It was always about achieving business objectives. It was how we went about doing it. What Ray is talking about is, for example, our quest to attract and retain the best talent. We're the number one place in the world to work. Why would we not want to continue down that path? And so that is particularly what that particular property is meant to do, is to attract and retain the best talent from Georgia Tech. But I think you're going to see more and more people focusing on that and people having to make decisions, professionals having to make decisions about, is that half-hour commute to and from the office, by the time I get there, am I going to make that time up because I'm going to have made more progress towards whatever the business objective I'm chartered with achieving is, or can I do just as well at home? And that's where we're going to have to earn the commute. But that also people are going to have to become much more laser focused than ever on what is the business objective they're responsible for delivering and how is it best for them to deliver it.
Yeah.
Yeah. If one thing to add to that too, Ivan, you know, we're also willing to make mistakes, right? So in a built environment, that's usually the last thing you want somebody that has my job to hear them say, right? Because, once you stand up a wall, it's really difficult to move it, right? So one of the things we're trying to do is, frankly, stand up less walls, make solutions more about furniture. You know, there's a great metaphor I shared recently with someone when I was in design school. They described how often what will happen when they lay out college campuses or large campuses, that the last thing that you'll put in are the sidewalks. Because, you know, as soon as you put a sidewalk down, you're directing someone that, no, if you're going to go from point A to point B, you go that way. And often, and you probably have seen this, you'll probably start to notice it now more in your regular life. You see people cut corners all the time and walk through the flower bed and all that, because that's actually the path they want to go, right? So you will see a lot of forward thinking folks when they lay out city centers and so on. Often the sidewalks are the last to go. They'll see the path, you know, that people take, and then they'll say, well, there's your sidewalk. You know, kind of.
That's where it should go.
Right. We're trying to kind of do the same thing with workspace. You know, we're defining the space. We're taking our best shot at what we feel is appropriate, because we're still learning, right? We're not that many years out of COVID, right? So we're still learning. But we have a willingness to say, okay, well, we got that wrong, so let's move it. And in some cases, we aren't even putting things in and seeing how people react to them, or pull chairs together to do, you know, that kind of a thing, and say, well, there you go. That's how that space actually should be used. So there has to be, I think, you have to find, you have to find a way to reintroduce that element of experimenting and willingness to make mistakes and so on to get it right, because none of us, this is all new territory. Even though we've opened up a few spaces, I would not call myself an expert, you know, at post-COVID workspace design. I just happen to have a few under my belt that I'm learning from, but it's a constant learning curve.
Sure. Yeah, curious, you know, many of us work in older layouts, older buildings that are constrained by the physical walls that are up. Are there one or two things that are easy to do that you would recommend people look at?
Yeah, furniture. You don't have to move walls to change out furniture. You could take conference rooms and make them into 2- and 3-person conference rooms or quiet rooms. You know, you can do all kinds of stuff without moving walls. And we, by the way, we do some of that as well. We'll bring in different varied types of furniture. We'll get rid of cubicles. And if they're still around, I hope at this point, most cubicles have been recycled and are long gone, you know, but we will create flexible environments around furniture solutions, even if we're not taking down walls, you know, as that sort of first step to see how people react to that. And if we go, oh, no one's really using that room, let's switch, well, the furniture's wrong in there, you know, whatever it might be. So that is an extremely low barrier to entry for anyone. Anyone could move furniture around, you know.
Right.
Now, you may have some problems with power drops and that kind of stuff. You might have to come up with some more novel solutions to, you know, whip power down from the ceiling or whatever it might be. But the fact that most of us, unless we're on a tethered, dedicated workstation because of something, you know, bespoke that we do, are wireless. We're wireless on our phones, we're wireless on our laptops. So the majority of knowledge workers are not tethered to a specific spot, so they can move around. So right. Yeah, that's one thing I advise people on all the time. If they're like, yeah, I don't really have any budget. I'm like, okay, so do you have enough to buy furniture or get even used furniture? Yeah, we could do that. Start there.
Change Start the way to the furniture apply. You have is used. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. And the other thing that I see in my customers when I'm talking with them often is that they do not have enough video-enabled conference rooms, or the video-enabled conference rooms they have aren't enabled properly, so it doesn't provide for a great experience for the people who are in the room or for the remote attendees. And I think you can go back and do some retrofit of your video and make it a more consistent experience. If I took you into Pen 1 and I showed you how to use any one of the video-enabled rooms in that space, you could easily walk to any other video-enabled room in that space, whether large, small, an executive boardroom, a collaboration space, or a single quiet space to do a one-on-one conversation, and you would know how that technology worked, and you'd be able to work it effectively. And those are the kind of things that make a huge difference. If you think about that, people are your number one expense. Well, real estate and people, those are your two biggest expenses in most businesses. You've got to make efficient use of both of those things. So yes, even if you think you don't have budget for furniture, you don't have budget for a better collaboration experience, think of what you're costing your business in terms of people and their inability to effectively collaborate and achieve your goals.
Yeah, that's a great point, right? In terms of the effectiveness of the people, the efficiency of the people, we even see impacts on things like recruiting and retention, right? If people don't feel engaged, if they feel like they can't collaborate effectively, turnover starts to go up, engagement starts to go down, right? Lots of impacts if people feel like they can't collaborate effectively. Absolutely. So we're talking about using the physical space and technology to enable collaboration. So let's try a little experiment here. There was a really interesting report on CBS News the other day about hybrid working. And it said that one of the drivers of people wanting to stay at home is fueled by a desire for personal autonomy, right? People want a greater degree of independence and control over their environment. And they even use a little example of, well, I can, you know, when I'm at home, I can set the thermostat to the temperature that I want. Whereas if I'm in a conference room, it's too cold for one person and too warm for another person. So I'd love to hear the two of you collaborate together on this topic of how you can sort of overcome or live with this potential obstacle of personal autonomy.
Okay. Making me think of my feet. Well, speaking already, you want to go first, Janet, or do I? No, you want me to go? Okay. I think the way you start to address that is by increasing choice in the environments where people are coming into, right? So if you run with the thesis statement you made, right? So here I am, I'm at home and my thermostat's right there. Here, right? I can go over and adjust it. Can't necessarily do that in an office building, right? Because it's just not set up that way. Nothing is, in some cases it is super zoned, right? That you can do that. But what I can do in an office space is in an environment that's either too warm or too cold, is I can pick up and move that whole session, that whole meeting, that whole interaction to another area that might be more conducive, not only for me, but for others. So I can be more spread out. I can be tighter together. I can, we can move outside. I mean, we can go anywhere we want, really, right? So by being untethered and by having a technology that will follow me and I'll still have those connections to remote people or whatever it might be, I think it starts to answer that question in a more seated environment. Will I ever be able to perfectly replicate it? No, you know, I can't compete, right? You just can't. But I can give you as much autonomy, as much choice, and as much control as humanly possible in that environment so you can make decisions and feel like at least some of the control point came back to you. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think there's another piece that we haven't really touched on as much as maybe we could have. And that is that we have the ability now with power over an Ethernet, which is basically being able to use your Ethernet cable like you used to connect your laptop or your PC to. You may even have Ethernet in your home environment, but you can put a switch on the back of that actually delivers 90 watt power. So you can power things like access points and cameras and video devices, all sorts of different kinds of sensors. You can also put your building systems, such as your security, your elevators, your HVAC systems, et cetera, onto a network now. That didn't used to really be a plausible solution, but with the advances in technology, you can actually get to where you have, for your building systems, a consolidated network that allows you to separate out the building systems into their operating environments, but allows you to also aggregate the data on the back end. As we start to lay the foundation for being able to do that in both existing builds that we're doing major retrofits to, or in new builds, it starts to open up a whole bunch of opportunity for use cases. For example, I could set my personal preferences for how the warmth I like of a space or the cool I like of a space. I could actually allow my meeting system to communicate with the HVAC system and tell it, hey, Janet has a meeting in there in an hour and she likes it a little cooler, or of the 10 occupants that she has or the 10 participants in the meeting, most of them like it about this temperature. And it can adjust the temperature of the room to accommodate not only what the occupants like, but it can say there's going to be 10 people. So those are each like a 30 watt light bulb in the room. So I've got to accommodate the heat they're bringing into the room.
Right.
And then balance that out to what that temperature ought to be for them to be comfortable. And I think as we get more sophisticated about things like that, it will create a different sense of how people feel about going to an office, especially if that autonomy is what they're looking for, it will automatically be built in. And that's really a paradigm shift. What I see is that people want to, Ray will attest to this, they want to do things the old way. And we've gone through a paradigm shift. We were kind of slowly marching in that direction, and COVID has just flipped the switch.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
I love that, right? So, you know, you've got, Ray, you're talking about autonomy from the physical space point of view, right? How you use the space, giving people more flexibility for, you know, how they configure spaces and who they work with in various spaces. Janet, you're talking about from a technology point of view, right? How do you leverage technology to do that? And that's really bringing in the expertise that the two of you are bringing, right, to this collaboration from both a technology perspective and a design of physical space perspective. That's a great example of what we talk about with smarter collaboration, right? It's bringing together expertise, diverse views, and thinking about how do you come to a better solution together, right, than any one person could figure out themselves. So that's great. I love that. Well, listen, Janet Ray, thank you very much for joining us today on this edition of Smarter Collaboration. That, you know, the explanation that you gave of Cisco's vision and how you guys are coming at it, both from a physical space and a technology point of view, I think was really enlightening for me. And it actually made me think about, okay, how am I going to go back to my office and think about opportunities? You know, where's that low hanging fruit maybe to do some of the kinds of changes that you talked about, both from a physical space design and a technology point of view. So thank you very much. That's
thank
wrap.
You.
Thank
great.
You.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. That was a fascinating discussion. For me, I was really surprised to learn about Cisco's approach, both to the physical environment and the technology in such a very client-centric way. You had Janet coming at the world from a technology angle, right? She talked about new builds versus retro builds and tying that into the personal environment. Like, I love that example of using the Ethernet to deliver tech in a more flexible way. And then you had Ray coming at it from the physical design angle, right? The physical space, thinking about the future of space design for Cisco and for Cisco's clients. So I was really impressed with the way Cisco is thinking about increasing the flexibility and the choice around collaboration spaces by bringing both the physical and the technology together to transform how we work. And there were, I guess, two big takeaways for me. One was that the physical space matters, right? Both as a motivator for people to come into the office and to facilitate effective interactions when you're there, right? We talked for a moment about Cisco's campfire concept. And you may have heard Ray say, the voice of the designers are being heard. Right? The voice of the designers are being heard. That tool to me was a fascinating manifestation of the collaboration between the designers of space and the designers of technology, right? Bringing two sets of different expertise together to create and to envision and create something that neither of them could have created on their own, right? So I thought that was very cool. The other big takeaway for me was that technology itself can be either an enabler or a barrier to collaboration, right? Janet talked about starting with the end in mind, thinking about why you are trying, what you're trying to do with a space, what you're trying to achieve right? And how you use technology to get there, right? And we've seen in our research that, you know, there are times when being face-to-face is critical. There are other times when fully remote can work, and hybrid working sits in the middle somewhere. So having that end in mind, right, and being very intentional, thinking about in advance about the goals of the meeting and how to construct the most effective format using both technology and space for that conversation is critical. So for me, it's really insightful conversation around technology and physical space and some really interesting things that Cisco is doing to push us forward along those two dimensions. So remember, until our next show, you may be able to run faster by yourself, but you can go further with others.
Thank you for joining us on Smarter Collaboration. This series is created by Gardner and Collaborators and produced by Success Made to Last Productions based in Austin, Texas. Today's show was written by Ivan Matviak, Rick Tokini, and Christine Dunn. Executive producer is Rick Tokini. Sound design and post-production are led by Heather Barnes and Carla Tokini. Original score is from Dynascore, and our operations manager is Marie Ross. This podcast can be heard wherever podcasts are distributed, along with GardnerandCo.co and SuccessMadeToLast.com. Join us for another Smarter Collaboration program where intentional collaboration creates breakthrough outcomes.
I love being part of AmeriCue Credit Union, where I share my dreams, my goals, and my challenges with those who know me best, where I stay connected no matter where my life takes me, and financial solutions are designed with my best interest in mind. Create a meaningful connection. Visit AmeriCue.org to learn more and open an account today. AmeriCue and you, let's connect. Membership eligibility required. Insured by NCUA.